From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzek Rolat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. The world waits to see what the United States will do in Syria, but today Joshua Landis, Rebecca Cruz, and I will talk about the fear in Japan that the amount of contaminated water at the Fukushima nuclear power plant is getting out of hand. We'll also discuss the increase of attacks and violence against women in India and elsewhere.
And a lot of these gangs are young men in poorer areas that are not able to find work and that there's this sort of dynamic going on.
And later, my conversation about indigenous people and issues in Central America with Francisco Cali.
If you don't make a land reform, the development in Guatemala is going to be impossible.
He's the only indigenous member of the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. But first, this hour's news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat. Joshua Landis, Rebecca Cruz, we continue to wait for word about what's going to happen with the United States' potential strike in Syria. The Senate and the House continue to debate these things. So we're going to put the Syria issue aside right now and return to it later and focus on a couple of other issues around the world. First of all, Japan remains in the news after its very large earthquake and tsunami a couple of years ago and the resulting damage to the Fukushima nuclear power plant. And so the question is, and has been, you know, what is the lingering damage here regarding the spillage of radioactive material? And the fact that scientists are now reporting that the Pacific Ocean, has been polluted by this radioactive material, radioactive waste, and that it is potentially making its way across the Pacific and possibly going to affect Hawaii and other parts of the United States on the West Coast. So what are we to make of this, Rebecca? There seems to be still a significant amount of debate about the danger here.
Well, Suzette, there seem to be two things that are going on here. First, this week we did hear from Japanese officials that Fukushima is releasing more radiation than they previously thought. It's at the highest levels that it's been since the tsunami, that people, if they were to stand in certain facilities there, they would get a deadly dose. And then there's this other issue of the radiation that's leaked over the last couple of years that is making its way across the Pacific. And a report came out from Science China that this is a massive amount, that it could have serious ramifications. It could affect Hawaii, could affect the western coast of the United States. And now we have some scientists coming out from Hawaii and other areas saying that this is a little bit overblown and that we will get some of this radiation, but it will not affect us. It will not affect species in the United States.
But clearly this isn't a good thing. I mean, we have radioactive contamination of the ocean. And so this is going to have implications, right, for sea life, if nothing else. What about fishing? What about, you know, the resulting human consequence of
most of the scientists underline that this will be much, much smaller doses in California and Hawaii than there were in Europe after the Russian reactor melted down. But it underlines the dangers. And we saw in Vermont just recently a nuclear power plant was closed down and not renewed because people are very anxious about it. And that's going to be an ongoing part of our debate on how we use energy and whether nuclear power is really going to be a big part of it in the future.
Well, and this really has affected the Japanese fishing industry. Of course, they're trying to rebuild after all of this, and there is still contaminants there, and the fishing industry is almost devastated, and they still have people that are displaced from these events.
Well, definitely something that we'll continue to watch. So as far as another issue, India, unfortunately, continued stories of growing violence against women in India. We saw not too long ago a gang rape and murder of a young Indian woman. You know, it's hard to hold these people accountable, the perpetrators of these crimes. We see more and more of these things happening. What is going on and what can be done about this situation? People are starting to become outraged and coming out into the streets. But at the same time, there's not enough push to really, you know, have an impact on the sentences that these young men are receiving.
Well, it's really hard to know because, of course, rape figures are always reported inaccurately. But we do seem to be seeing more and more in the last year. You mentioned the case in December. The six men were accused of raping the young woman in New Delhi, and she passed away, unfortunately. The youngest member involved in that, 17, has just gotten a verdict that he was tried as a juvenile and he will get 3 years in a facility. the others, the four remaining, one committed suicide of the five, the four remaining, their verdict will come out next week and we'll see what the punishment is. But yes, a lot of outrage that that's not much of a punishment. This young woman died. And there are other cases. There was a Swiss tourist that was raped. And then here in August, another young woman in Mumbai was gang raped. So a lot going on there. Some speculation that this has to do with kind of class divisions. You have a lot of young women who are now entering the labor force. They're part of the middle class and people can associate with them. And a lot of these gangs are young men in poorer areas that are not able to find work and that there's this sort of dynamic going on.
But again, unfortunately, this is not something that only India experiences.
Not.
I mean, violence against women in these kinds of cases is worldwide. Mm-hmm. Joshua, I mean, you
well,
you
that's true. We've just had the Dominic Strauss-Kahn case here in the United States, the French official running for president in France who was accused of attacking a maid in New York. But since then, a number of stories have come out about him organizing these large orgies in various cities across Europe, and his staff was involved in getting the young prostitutes brought who were treated very roughly. And this is, you know, this is not just a third world problem. Even in places like the West, where the veil of shame and the taboo against talking about violence against women has been lifted, at least in part, and we talk about it, and it's still going on. And you see these things. All of a sudden, a little world opens up, and you see this kind of misbehavior has gone on for years, and nobody speaks up.
And with impunity. I mean, that's the issue, is that it's not just – I mean, it continues to happen because there is no consequence. There's no accountability. No. There's no ability to hold those responsible for these crimes.
And shame is a big part of this. Now, obviously, it's not just shame, but it's power. It's other things like that. But shame in the third world, and particularly in the Islamic world, where we heard about Afghanistan and Pakistan. But here, India is not an Islamic country. And it's widespread, the voicelessness of women and the shame factor, so that families do not make it public.
Well, clearly there are a lot of explanations perhaps and a lot of things that we need to consider on this issue regarding violence against women, something that we'll return to again. But thank you both, Joshua and Rebecca, for your insight about these two important topics today, the importance of our environment and the importance of women and gender equity and unnecessary violence.
Thank Pleasure.
You. Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment for me or any of our panelists, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at WorldviewsKGOU. You can also leave a comment on our website, kgou.org. Next, I'll talk with Francisco Cali from the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. The Guatemala native is a vice chairman and the only indigenous person on the 18-member UN panel. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat. My guest today is Jose Francisco Cali Tsai. He's a Cachiquel Mayan from Guatemala who serves as the vice chairman of the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. He's also the only indigenous member of the panel of 18 independent experts recognized for their work in the field of human rights. Jose Francisco Cali Tsai, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you.
So you are from Guatemala.
Yes, I am from Guatemala.
And you work on indigenous issues, rights regarding indigenous peoples. What are the key issues regarding indigenous rights and the rights of indigenous peoples in Guatemala that you focus on?
Well, actually, in Guatemala, specifically in this moment, it's a land problem. Also, we have access to justice.
So when you say access to justice, you mean being able to have access to the procedures and through courts and governments recognizing certain rights of indigenous peoples?
Both, because the thing is that as you probably are aware is that in Guatemala in 1996 has finished an internal war that took place for 36 years. And the people who had been affected by that war mainly were the indigenous peoples. And now they are trying to ask for justice, but they were agreed to sign not only the peace agreement, but also they signed an amnesty law, which it said that all those people who commit human rights violations will not be persecuted legally.
Will not be prosecuted.
Exactly.
Okay, so those who victimized the indigenous populations in Guatemala, those who... When you say victimized, because it was a bloody war. So
exactly.
So it was the indigenous populations that suffered significantly
exactly.
From that war. And so those who were perpetrators are not being prosecuted and held accountable for their
exactly.
crimes. Okay.
So that's why now some indigenous people, they are asking to persecute those perpetrators. But you know that the history of Guatemala, non-indigenous person have been part of the making decision power. So that's why until probably 5 or 6 years ago, there had been some indigenous person who were starting to get involved into the government institutions, but still very, very recently. So that's why indigenous people doesn't have any power to make changes in the legal system in Guatemala, not in the political parties, participation. Economically, of course, the history of Guatemala has been that that indigenous people don't have any participation in the sharing of the wealth of the economy in Guatemala. Of course, indigenous people have been participating in making that wealth, but not participating in the benefit of that work that they have done.
So when you say that they haven't participated, what is the ultimate source of that lack of participation? So is it the government keeping them out of being able to run for office, being able to hold a seat or vote? What is the ultimate source of that lack of participation?
You know that all the Latin American countries, when the state has been constructed on the base of discrimination and racial discrimination against indigenous people. In Guatemala, before the so-called the democratic period of Guatemala in 1944 to 54, indigenous people needed, as we call, viability card to be able to walk and freely in the streets. It's a card that they need to be sealed by the landowners to tell the police or the authorities that that person had been served in the big farm or the big plantation 180 days work a year. And if he or she doesn't, had been not fulfilled those 180 days, they will be taken to a prison, obligated to work for the government or to return to the big plantation to comply with the 180 days of work. And sometimes you know that those plantation owners, they have not sealed those cards. So in that way is that in Guatemala, and I believe in other countries where indigenous people have lived, have been the same. The discrimination against indigenous people has been historically. So that's why the participation of indigenous people is very recently that is coming into those systems.
I'm speaking with Francisco Cali, a vice chairman and the only indigenous person on the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. I'm Suzette Gralat, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. I'm Suzette Gralat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. My guest, Francisco Cali, is a vice chairman of the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. He's also the only indigenous person on the committee and an expert on human rights in Central America. Just before the break, he described how discrimination against indigenous people in Guatemala prevented the population from participating in the political process and the sharing of wealth. So racial discrimination being systematic and widespread,
yes.
Not only in Guatemala, but I know you've worked internationally as well,
yes.
Elsewhere in the region, elsewhere around the world. So this is something that you see in terms of the racial discrimination against indigenous peoples broadly. Can
yes.
you speak a little bit more about that and perhaps relate that to, I mean, you've mentioned, you know, access to justice, human rights violations, but you also mentioned land. This is also a significant issue, right? Land problems or rights to land. But the kind of how the broader issue of racial discrimination has an impact systematically across countries, not just in Guatemala, but elsewhere.
You can see that in the education system in Guatemala or in all the other Latin American countries, you will see that the quality of education in Indian communities is so low that even they can read and write, the history that they have been taught is against even their own culture. And it's because, again, the education is based on racism and racial discrimination. So the problem in not only in Guatemala, but all the other countries where indigenous people live, is that they are trying to people forget their history. Land and how it's connected to this issue is that since the Spanish came to the continent, they started to take the best land for cultivation. And they concentrate the Indian people, especially in Guatemala, in the western highlands of Guatemala or the north highlands of the country. There was not good land for cultivation. But in this moment, they had not in this moment, in the 50s, they discovered that those land are very wealthy land, specifically because they have minerals like gold, silver, copper, and other minerals that that they can take from those lands. And that is why, again, they are trying to take out the land of the hands or the small plot of land that they have still had in our countries. And the problem there is not only that the access of the land, but if you wanted to have an economy for indigenous people, it's going to be impossible because our land is not naturally, it's not for cultivation. It's a forest land. And if you deforestate or you cut all the trees from that land, you are going to degrade the soil of that part of the country. So in 10, 15 years, again, we are going to have land that doesn't to be good for cultivation. So many people believe that what the indigenous people are asking is for land reform. And that's why when you speak about land reform, immediately they are just returning back their tape, we said, in Guatemala, and the fear of communists is starting to be in their mind because it's supposed to be that the land reform is only the communist people are the ones who are asking for land reform. But in the economy of Guatemala, if you don't make a land reform and if you don't want to come to the moment of the humanity that we are in this moment, the development in Guatemala is going to be impossible.
So you've painted, obviously, a very vivid picture of all of the issues and concerns that indigenous peoples are dealing with, from lack of, not just lack of education, but lack of quality education, lack of access to the justice system, violations of their rights in many ways, not only their right to life, but their right to property and good property, good land. So, but, you know, the issue is then what is the solution here? Because I notice that you've worked with the government. You've worked with the government of Guatemala. You've worked with other international organizations, the United Nations and others. Are governments really the problem here? And if so, is this the way to go about solving some of these problems, is by working within government? Or is it perhaps, the approach should be working from outside the government and pressuring governments to engage in, as you say, land reform, for example?
No, I think the main problem in Guatemala is the political system that we have in this moment. Of course, if we analyze very carefully the situation of Guatemala, we are going to see that the corruption is not something that is taking place just now. It's historically in our countries, especially in Guatemala. The corruption is something that is affecting mainly all the government, all levels of government in this moment. There is a former president that is in New York in this moment. He was extradited to the United States because he is accused to be or try to deposit something like $20 million to American banks. That the money that has coming from the public resources. So I believe that that is only one example that what level of corruption we have in Guatemala. I believe that it's not only land reform, because land reform, if we are going to do a land reform and give a piece of land to each family, we don't have enough land in Guatemala to give land to everybody. But the problem here is also that if we are talking about land reform, we are thinking that indigenous people, they are all farmers. But in indigenous people, we are farmers, craftsmen.
It's a much more diverse population.
They are intellectual. Yeah. Exactly. It's the same as the whole society of Guatemala.
You need a broader approach, not only land reform and giving indigenous people's land.
Exactly. So, but the solution of the indigenous peoples in Guatemala is the solution of the Guatemalan society. We have to see, as you said, in a very broad way solution, because there is a solution for the political problem that we are facing in Guatemala, but also I think that all the Guatemalan has to participate. When we are talking about indigenous issue, the Society of Guatemala believes that indigenous issues, only indigenous people has to discuss those issues. And the reality is that we, the Guatemalan, we have to discuss all the issues that is affecting the Society of Guatemala.
So the society as a whole needs
exactly.
to come together to find a
yeah.
proper
and,
solution.
And one of the other problems also is the trust. If I don't trust you, how I can sit in a table to discuss the situation? So what we need is to build that trust into the whole society. That the indigenous people doesn't want, as they are calling, a reverse discrimination. That is not the reality. What we wanted to do is to have justice, equality in Guatemala.
Well, Francisco, thank you so much for sharing your perspectives on this very challenging issue with us today on Worldviews.
Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Francisco Cali, a native of Guatemala who currently serves as the only indigenous member of the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. We have a transcript of this interview on our website, kgou.org. KGOU produces Worldviews alongside the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Hillary Gibson prepares the research for our interviews, and Brian Hardzinski records and edits our audio. For Rebecca Cruz and Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Grelott.